Over at bangthebook.com, we'll have you fully prepared for the national championship game. My preview is already up. We got some stuff from Alan Moody. And once we get more prop betting stuff out there, I'll have some articles for you over the weekend with my favorite props for the game, as well as player props, and maybe some of the novelty stuff as well. Daily NHL, daily college basketball, daily NBA, previews for all four divisional round games in the NFL playoffs, additional NFL content coming your way. Make sure you check out Danny Vorgs' NFL model projections for this weekend as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. A couple of guests on the program here today, and we start with Thor Nystrom from Roto World. Thor, great to get you back on the show, man. Happy to have you with me. How's everything going?
It's going great, Adam. Great to be here.
That's awesome to have you back on the show, man. And like I said, you know, it's good timing here with Clemson and LSU. The national championship game on Monday night down in New Orleans. A lot of 5.5s out there in the offshore market. A lot of brick and mortars sitting on 6. I read your preview over at Roto World, which is absolutely phenomenal, by the way. You've got some thoughts on this game.
I do. Yeah. We can jump right in. I like Clemson, and I hope you can get 6, but I honestly don't need the points personally. I think the wrong team is favored here. I don't know what your thoughts are, but those are mine. I'll just start right out with that.
And you talked about this in your preview. It's something we've talked about on the show here. I mean, before the semifinals, Clemson's a favorite in this hypothetical title matchup. Even with LSU getting, you know, the nod for this game being in New Orleans, Clemson's a favorite going into the semifinals. After one game, all of a sudden LSU 5.5 or 6, it's an overreaction to be sure.
It really is. Yeah. And it's a recency bias thing for sure. It's just that, you know, in terms of the matchup, you know, when you go in on paper, I tend to focus more on that stuff than some of these, like, you know, ancillary things that you're seeing on television and stuff like this. And when you dig into the matchups, the things that actually matter, once we start getting into the, you know, like, you know, into the game, when the bullets are flying and stuff like this, I just think that the things that Clemson does, they're going to give LSU a lot of problems when we get onto the field. And I think all you have to do is flip the clock back 1 year when we went, you know, to last year's title game. And I talk a lot about that in the column that you guys can read at Roto World, but just go back to last year's title game against Alabama and what Brent Venables and Clemson's defense did to Tua. Now, obviously Clemson's defense personnel wise is a bit different this year, but the things that Venables does on defense, and again, I talk a lot about this in the column, and I'm talking schematically, I think they're going to give Joe Burrow a lot of problems on Monday night. I'm talking about things like disguise coverages, replacer blitzes, things that he does to confuse the quarterback pre-snap, post-snap, and things he does to confuse the offensive line, things he does to change his defensive pieces around, and stuff like that. He's going to do things to confuse the quarterback, to just different stuff like that. I think he's going to do stuff to disrupt the timing of Burrow, confuse Burrow. And we can talk about how that's going to manifest as far as the player props go, you know, with regards to specific players in LSU's passing game. But I think that's the way that you disrupt LSU's passing game, and that's the way that you take down LSU's entire offense. That's the way that you beat LSU. I just think this is a really bad matchup for LSU.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, you look back to the semifinal game against Ohio State, and Ohio State broke some big runs in the first half of that game. They had a few situations where Fields kind of threw it up, and a wide receiver made a big play. And, you know, quite frankly, I mean, that was sort of the Justin Fields passing attack over the course of the season. Ohio State's wide receivers ran really, really good routes, got separation, and if it was a 50-50 ball, they came down with it. And once Clemson started making those adjustments later in the second quarter, and then, of course, in the second half, they did confuse Fields. And Fields wasn't mobile. He had the knee injury. He was kind of hampered a little bit, playing left-handed, as they like to say. And it showed. And maybe if Dobbins doesn't go out, Ohio State still wins that game. Maybe LSU needs to run the football on Clemson. Maybe Edwards-Helaire needs to have a big game for them. But once they confuse Justin Fields, who, I don't think he's as cerebral of a quarterback as Joe Burrow. I don't think he's as good of a passer as Joe Burrow. But once they gave Fields those different looks, he struggled. And we'll see if they do that right at the beginning of the game against Burrow, or it's something they incorporate as the game goes along. But that chess match, that psychological chess match between Burrow and really Venables, is probably the key to this game.
I would agree with that. And nobody's better at the adjustments than Venables and Sweeney. And nobody's better at going into the games, but particularly with the adjustments, if things aren't going well initially, they will figure it out as things go along. Ohio State, obviously, Ohio State, in terms of S&P Plus heading into that game, they were the number one team in the nation. I think perceptually, I talk about this in the column. I think people forget this, talking about the perception of the line. Yes, LSU dominated Oklahoma, and yes, it was difficult for Clemson to put away Ohio State, but heading into that game, Ohio State was the number one, SP Plus team in the nation, whereas Oklahoma probably, in hindsight, didn't deserve to be in the playoff field. And so we're talking about sort of different, things. The national championship game maybe should have been Clemson against Ohio State in hindsight, those may have been the two best teams in the nation. You know what I mean, Adam, like at the end of the day. So that's just sort of like how I'm seeing some of those different things. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing is that, a lot of people kind of looked at the semifinals and said, well, Clemson, Ohio State is more of a national championship game than it is a semifinal. And I think too, you kind of have this perception of LSU. They blew out Georgia in the SEC championship game. And my contention is, I don't think Georgia was that good. Defensively, agreed. Georgia was great. Offensively, they weren't that good. I mean, obviously they had, some questions on the offensive line and whatnot. Jake Fromm's not going to go out there and hang a bunch of points on LSU. Trevor Lawrence can. Justin Fields probably would have been able to. Jake Fromm, I mean, I don't think he's that great of a quarterback. And obviously we'll see, what he, where he winds up going in the draft, but you can poke a lot of holes at LSU, and maybe that's unfair because I know people are going to say the same thing is, well, Clemson didn't play at Georgia. Clemson didn't play anybody in the regular season. I understand that. They also crushed just about everybody that they played. So they did what they had to do for the most part to get to this point. And I agree, the recency bias here of LSU waxing Georgia, of LSU blowing out Oklahoma, it's caused a pretty big ripple in this number. And the ironic thing about all of it is Ohio State beat three top 15 teams in a row going into the semifinal. They were still an underdog against Clemson.
Yeah, exactly. And then, a lot of things went wrong for Clemson in that game. And they still managed to win that game, even though they had two wide receiver injuries, even though Ohio State and their awesome secondary managed to erase those receivers with those injuries. Trevor Lawrence found a way. Venables and Dabo found a way. They found a way. They found a way to beat perhaps what was maybe the best team in the nation if they weren't. And I guess the way that I see this game, if Ohio State wasn't the best team in the nation, to me, Clemson was. And I guess I just see this game different than the public does, or that Vegas does, or whoever, is informing this line. If Joe Public isn't, because to me, LSU is not 6 points better than Clemson in a vacuum. I think that Clemson is the better team in a vacuum. And it doesn't have to do with this idea of just because Clemson is battle tested or championship, whatever, it doesn't have anything to do with that. And it doesn't have to do with, LSU with recency bias or anything like that. It just has to do with, it just has to do with personnel, and it has to do with coaching staffs and stuff like that. And it has to do with like number based things and stuff like that. And I just think that Clemson is a better matchup on paper, specifically for LSU. I think that the thing that Clemson does so well is the thing that they're best at is taking away passing attacks. We see it over and over and over again. And this year's team is number one in numerous pass defense categories, both conventionally and in advanced stats. You know, I like, you know, you look at like the SP plus stats, you know, and again, and the conventional stats, like the, you know, passer rating against, conventional, the conventional pass stat, defense, pass defense, but also like, you know, the regular SP plus, advanced pass defense metrics. They're also number one in numerous ones of those. And, you know, again, they have awesome, you know, defenders back there. They have, you know, multiple guys in the secondary that are going to the NFL. But they also have Venables, you know, who's the disguise coverages and the way that they do that and these replacer blitzes. It's just next level. Like Venables is, I can't say enough about him. And the other thing I want to talk about, and Adam, you and I last year, and I have to give you a lot of credit for this. I don't want to blow smoke up your butt, but last year you talked a lot about Isaiah Simmons on this very podcast. We were talking about props heading into that Alabama game. You brought up Isaiah Simmons, and we talked about Simmons on this podcast a lot. And Isaiah Simmons went absolutely ballistic in that game last year. I think Isaiah Simmons is going to have a lot to say on Monday night. And I think Isaiah Simmons, I think that they are going to sick him on Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson, you know, LSU, just to talk about schematics, I want to get into specifics a little bit. You know, we sort of been talking generalities a little bit. I want to get into specifics a little bit in terms of the scheme. You know, LSU traditionally, you know, these past, you know, many years, you know, they've had this sort of run first offense, you know, it's been sort of turn back the clock, et cetera. And then this year they go spread, they're throwing a ton, and yet they're top five in the nation in a lot of these offensive efficiency categories. And you wonder, like, how can they be throwing the ball, you know, so much, and yet they skyrocketed in all the efficiency categories. And they're also, you know, explosive and stuff like that. But how did they get so efficient so fast despite, you know, throwing so much more? Well, a part of it is they have this big slot in Justin Jefferson, and he can just abuse these small collegiate slot guys because, you know, in the NFL, there's more cornerbacks to go around. You know, you have better slots in the NFL, but in college, you do not have that many defensive backs to go around. You know, most college programs do not have really good slot cornerbacks. That's typically where your worst cornerback is going. It's typically where the runt of the litter is going. Unfortunately for LSU, Clemson has a guy that I like to call Isaiah Simmons, and they are going to be able to put him in the slot against Justin Jefferson. Jefferson had, I put this in my column, but he had 91 or 92% of his snaps came in the slot. Now this is just my postulation because Venables does a billion different things with Isaiah Simmons. They list him at linebacker, so he plays there. They can play him at safety. They can play him deep. They put him off the edge sometimes, and then he also plays in the slot. Like I said, he's listed at linebacker, won the buck. Yes, but you can play him literally anywhere. I refer to him as a nullifier. I think it is misleading to call him a linebacker. But in this game, what I would do, I would just say, hey, LSU, you know the Justin Jefferson thing, how you guys can just throw it to him and get first downs, whatever you want? Yeah, he's going away. So in this game, Justin Jefferson, he's going away because we're going to put Simmons on him. So sorry about that. And then as far as Jamar Chase goes, we're going to put Mullen on him on the outsider, 6'1" NFL corner. And then we're going to have double team help over the top all game. So how do you like that? And then I suppose, you know, on the other side with Terrace Marshall, who right now has an injury. And as of a couple of days ago, we weren't sure he was going to play. I guess he is now, but, you know, he's not 100%. I suppose you can throw to him more, but your Biletnikoff winner, Chase, he's going to be double teamed the whole game. We're going to have one of the best defenders in college football just harassing Jefferson the whole time. We're going to have Venables. He, for the past couple of weeks, he's just been cooking up the craziest disguised looks ever for Joe Burrow. And we're just going to do that. And we know that you guys can't default back to running. It's just like Bama last year, only you guys don't have, you know, the multiple. If you were going to perceive that a team could default back to the run game more, you would have perceived that Alabama could do that more effectively than this LSU team. This LSU team is more top heavy, I think, you know, than that Alabama team was. I think this LSU team, you hinder that passing attack Like I said in the column, you shoot the blimp out of the sky. You know, Auburn earlier this season, I think they were one of the teams that came closest to doing it, and they almost beat LSU. I think if Clemson's able to do that at all, I think that they're going to give them a lot of problems. And I think Isaiah Simmons in particular, if he's able to take Jefferson out of the game and they do a lot of the double teams with Chase and they start to confuse Burrow, I just think that gives LSU offense a lot of problems.
Well, and I mean, let's look at this in terms of the college football playoff semifinal. You know, you want to talk about a player that's sort of almost a chameleon. Like, he can kind of play a bunch of different roles. Sean Wade for Ohio State. You know, before Sean Wade got ejected from that targeting call, Clemson had no points and 4.3 yards per play. This coming from ESPN stats and info. After the targeting call, after he got kicked out of the game, Clemson 8.4 yards per play, 29 points. Clemson's got three or four Sean Wades back there in the secondary of guys that can blitz, guys that can cover on the outside, guys that can be a slot corner, guys that can be out there and disguise themselves in zone, something like that. When Ohio State lost that guy against Clemson, they lost a lot on defense. Clemson has multiples of Sean Wade types of players, and that's what makes this Venables defense so good and why they're able to adjust so much. Half those guys back there in the secondary are hybrid types of players where they can line up anywhere and be effective. And having a guy like Simmons gives you that opportunity. Having a guy like Tanner Muse that can either follow Edwards-Helaire or provide help over the top gives you that opportunity. You know, they've got so many guys back there that they can just do so many different things with. And that's what Burrow has to figure out. And all of the sudden here, and again, I know the SEC is God's chosen conference and this and that, and it's got, you know, the greatest recruiting classes for the most part. All of a sudden, those LSU big physical athletic wide receivers are looking in the mirror when they line up against Clemson. And that was something I talked about going into the Ohio State Clemson game. The closest these two teams get to playing their respective talent levels was in practice. And that's how that game played out. This is a wake-up call for LSU. I know everyone thinks, oh, you know, they play in the SEC and this and that. Alabama moved it on them. Alabama couldn't stop them, but Alabama moved it on them. Clemson's got the best defense. And that's something I think is going to show up here in the first half of this game and very much in the second half as Venables makes his adjustments.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I mean, we can jump to LSU's defense right now. LSU's defense is a big riddle for me. And I think that's the hardest thing for me to figure right now. I think if there's one part of the handicap that was really tough for me, it's figuring out LSU's defense. I think it's really only instructive to talk about it since, you know, basically the middle of November or so, like going back to the Bama game. You know, Michael Divinity left the team after that Auburn game. And then you had the Alabama game was a disaster and a debacle. You had Tua probably shouldn't have been playing. You know, he was hurt. He couldn't run out of the pocket. He had that fumble early in the game where he was just scrambling towards the goal line. He fumbled without getting touched because he was afraid to make cuts. His velocity was affected because he couldn't step into throws. And yet they just ripped up LSU. His receivers were getting separation the whole game. Like the running lanes were wide open. It was easy for them to move the ball down the field. Next week against Ole Miss, LSU could not stop John Reese Plumlee, the quarterback, ran for over 200 yards. I mean, LSU gave up dang near 400 yards rushing. Like there was major issues on defense. But so these were the first two games that this veteran linebacker, Michael Divinity, had left the team. And then all of a sudden it was like, snap your fingers. In the last four games, LSU's defense was all of a sudden awesome. They went on this crazy run where the last four games, I think they allowed, it was 16 points per game. The first game was against Arkansas, so you sort of toss it out. But the last three games was very, very impressive. Texas A&M, Georgia, and then, of course, Oklahoma. And now, you know, I talk about this in the column. Michael Divinity is coming back now, and he's going to start in the dime package. And what the coaching staff was talking about a lot, it had to do with Divinity coming back to help out the pass rush. Well, now this is me sort of playing armchair psychologist a bit. But, you know, LSU's best pass rusher and one of their top pro prospects is this edge guy named Chaisson. You know, everybody knows about Chaisson. Chaisson's a freak, and he's, you know, he was, you know, he's been a guy that, you know, NFL draft guys like myself have talked about for a while now, just this edge freak. Chaisson's sort of ascendance has happened while Divinity has been away from the team on this sabbatical. This has been the best stretch of his career. He had a couple sacks against Oklahoma, and I think he has 3.5 sacks over the last, you know, 3 or 4 games or so. And this happens to coincide with this awesome run that LSU has had on defense here over the last 4 games or so. What I'm wondering is if Divinity's absence had anything to do with Chaisson's sort of ascendance here at the end of the season, and if Chaisson's ascendance had anything to do with LSU's defense suddenly taking off. It may or may not. But to me, I don't know if I would have taken the chance of allowing Divinity to come back to the team, particularly if that had anything to do with like, oh, let's bring Divinity back so that we can improve the pass rush. Because to me, if you finally have Chaisson playing the best football of his career, and this might be Chaisson's, you know, that probably is Chaisson's last game, I would just let Chaisson do all that. Like the point I made in my column is I wouldn't let Divinity take even one pass rushing opportunity from Chaisson. I wouldn't let his presence affect the game plan in that regard at all. And so my concern is just that, like, whatever sort of formula, whatever sort of alchemy that had formed in his absence, I was just sort of concerned a little bit that him coming back, that it could disrupt that at all. It's not any sort of disrespect to Divinity at all. Obviously, you know, the first 2 games in his absence, there was a sort of proof of concept of his value just in that the defense sort of cratered in those 2 games. But after that, it was just sort of like they found themselves, and Chaisson sort of like found himself. I don't know if I'm playing armchair psychologist with that, but I just have this sort of this weird feeling about it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is one of those games where your margin for error is so small that, you know, yeah, you want Divinity out there and maybe he will have an impact. Maybe he will wind up making a big play, but you don't want to do so at the expense of anything that Chaisson does. And you wonder if Dave Aranda will have the right game plan for that. And again, I mean, this is when you talk about teams like this, the elite level teams, and really there are 3 of them in college football this year: LSU, Clemson, Ohio State. From a talent standpoint, Alabama's number 4, and you know, maybe they should have been in the playoff. Who knows? Obviously, they didn't have the resume for it, but you know, they're the 4th most talented team in the country. In a game like this, where you don't have that big athletic edge, you don't have that big talent edge that you have in every other game that you play, it comes down to schematics. It comes down to coaching. It comes down to, you know, having players that do the things that we just talked about with Clemson's, you know, back 7, do the things that LSU's pass rushers and athletes like Delpit, like some of their guys can do. It's about maximizing exactly what those guys do well and then using that in your scheme. And you can overcomplicate the process a little bit. And maybe Clemson did that early in the game against Ohio State. Maybe they tried to do too much and it kind of burned them a little bit. And maybe they got back to what they do well in the second half. Maybe they overcompensated, knowing that Ohio State was the best team that they were playing. Or maybe it was just Ohio State's speed and athleticism kind of caught them off guard a little bit. But that's just it in this game. It's all about execution in a game like this. In the regular season, when you're Clemson, you're LSU, you can overcome some execution things because you're just better than the team you're playing. In this game, you're not better than the team you're playing. It's about who maximizes what their personnel does best. I don't know if Aranda does that here. We know LSU's offensive coaching staff has done that with Joe Brady, with Ensminger, and this big offensive philosophical change that they've had. But you wonder if in a game like this, more of that stability of Clemson doing what they did last year to win a title is why Clemson could very well win the title again this year.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and just going back to the Ohio State thing, I mean, you know, I don't think the point can be made enough about, you know, that team was really, really, really good. I think
the best Ohio State team of my lifetime, and they didn't win at all.
Exactly. And I think you know, when people go to the window or when people are handicapping this game or when people make that decision, I know it's really easy to think back to whatever day that was, December 28th, December 29th. And you just think about, you know, when you're watching those games and how impressive LSU looked. And then, you know, you think back to Clemson and how they had to claw back and stuff like that. And when you're making that decision, I know it's going to be really easy to think, oh, you know, LSU, LSU, they're world beaters and they can't be beat. And, you know, Clemson, they just didn't look that good and they were lucky to win. But, you know, people need to keep in mind that Clemson beat this team that a lot of years would have won the national title. You know, a lot of years were, would have been the best team in college football and, you know, may have been, you know, the Big Ten's best team in a little while here. You know, a lot of years that would have been a really, really awesome national title game. Whereas, again, you know, LSU beat sort of the runt of the litter of the recent Oklahoma teams. I mean, this was not the Kyler Murray Oklahoma team. This was not the Baker Mayfield Oklahoma team. And so I think those points have to be made. I think the other point that has to be made is Ohio State could do a lot more on offense. And what I'm talking about is diversification than LSU. You know, the point I was trying to make in my column is that LSU, they put up these bazooka stats on offense, but they play this style where bazooka stats is that's sort of what you're going for. It's a sort of like Mad Max type strategy where, you know, you're sort of playing balls to the wall. That's what you're doing. But like in a big spot like this, you know, and we saw this in the Clemson and Ohio State game, balance, I feel like is going to behoove your chances of winning more. And I think that, you know, it makes you harder to defend. And I think that's why Aranda's job on Monday night is going to be more difficult than Venables is, because Aranda, in addition to having to defend Trevor Lawrence, who, in my opinion, I know I'm in the minority here, but on Monday night, I would rather have Trevor Lawrence quarterbacking my team than Joe Burrow. But Aranda, in addition to that, he has to defend Etienne. And we haven't talked as much about like Etienne, but Etienne is a friggin' beast. And Edwards-Helaire, yeah, Edwards-Helaire is really good. But Edwards-Helaire is more of like, he's a complimentary player, right? Like he's a guy who, you can do a lot of things with him. And in the passing game, you know, in particular here in the second half, they've done a lot of really cool things with him. And Brady does so many cool things. I was rewatching like a lot of these cutups of these games here in the last like 10 days when I was like writing these, when I was writing the championship column and, just watching like all the pre-snap motion, everything they were doing with him, like in the passing game is like super duper fun, you know, and like, you know, everything they were doing with Edwards-Helaire. But like Etienne is a guy that, you know, he moves the needle for you, you know, whereas, Edwards-Helaire is more of like a complimentary guy and, you know, and like stuff like that. But I don't know. I just think Aranda's job is going to be a lot tougher than Venables is. And I think that Venables was just sort of constructed to take down and, you know, what LSU, what they do, you know?
Yeah. And as we transition over to talk about the props for a few minutes here, I mean, obviously we've already talked about some of the matchups that kind of intrigue us in this game. We don't have a lot of prop lines out there as of yet, but you start thinking about the game flow of this game. You start thinking about all the things we talked about schematically and what these coaches have to do in order to adjust to a lot of these different things. And I will say this, first and foremost, I know that all the talk in this game is going to be about the quarterbacks. It's going to be about Lawrence. It's going to be about Burrow. I think Etienne and Edwards-Helaire play a massive role in this game. I think if you're LSU, you do want to try to run the football a little bit, because we saw Ohio State run the football in Clemson. And also, it's going to get you away from some of those unbalanced fronts, disguised blitzes, all those types of things. Now, that's if Edwards-Helaire is healthy in this game. And I have every reason to believe that he's as healthy as he's been over the last little while. Didn't play much against Oklahoma. Wasn't needed against Oklahoma. If that's a guy that can't get you 20 to 25 touches in this game, I think it's going to be very difficult for LSU to win this football game. Now, Etienne, this is a guy, I mean, I think that, you know, you can do some more option with Etienne and Lawrence like they did, isolating Chase Young, beating Chase Young to the outside, kind of trying to tire him out a little bit. We saw them do that in that semifinal game. I would expect more of that here, especially to kind of offset Chaisson in the pass rush for LSU. I think Etienne's going to get a lot of touches here, whether they're receiving or rushing. I'm going to play some of his rushing over. I'm going to play Edwards-Helaire's receptions over. I think the running backs get a lot of space here in this game because you've got the ability to take these wide receivers deep downfield and kind of leave some of that open field in the middle for everybody. I think the running backs both do very well in this game.
I agree, particularly on the case of Etienne. I think he is going to have a really big game. And, you know, something that we should talk about is LSU's defense gives up a lot of explosive plays. And I like Etienne to rip off a couple explosive plays, you know, rushing the ball. He may even bust off a swing pass. I mean, we'll see. Clemson's receivers, you know, we have to see if you know, how sound they are, you know, coming off of their own injuries. It, you know, they're back at practice and everything like that. They got banged up in the Ohio State game. Seems like they're going to be healthy. You know, you mentioned Edwards-Helaire, seems like he's going to be as well. But Etienne, I like the matchup for him because of the reasons we were talking about. You know, LSU's run defense has been really up and down. I like the point that you made with regards to Lawrence as well. LSU's defenders got asked a lot about Lawrence's legs this week. Obviously, you know, he ran for over 100 yards against Ohio State. LSU's run defense has had some issues, you know, and we, you know, against quarterbacks as well. We talked a little bit about that. That has been a bit of a focus, you know, over this past week or two. However, you know, once the bullets start flying, it's not like that's something that they're going to be focusing on more than, you know, Lawrence passing downfield to Higgins and Ross, or that they're going to be focusing more on Etienne. And that's how these running lanes start to open up. And I made this point in my column where, you know, Tua threw a compromised Tua. He threw for over 400 yards in that Alabama game, even though he wasn't getting the mustard on the ball that he usually does. And the point that I was making was I thought he could have run for over 100 yards if he had wanted to. And if his leg was sound in that game, it's just that he didn't want to leave the pocket after that first unforced fumble. And I think Lawrence, you know, if he has his druthers and if he wants to, I think if you know, if that's available, I think it might be available. I think you might see him tuck it and run a couple times, whether that's designed or whether, you know, there's just some scrambles, because LSU, there has been times this season where that has been available. And Adam, going back to something that you said last year, I remember you said this too. You had a prop that had to do with Lawrence's rushing yards against Alabama. And I remember I joined you on that. And I remember that was one of the very few ones that we sweat until the end. And I think that Lawrence had a scramble later on. I think that we ended up cashing that one. The Lawrence rushing yards thing, I think that's something, I don't know what the prop is on that one, but that might be something to look into too, just because LSU's run defense has had some issues with that one as well.
Looks like right now, BetOnline, the only offshore I'm seeing with some props, their rushing yards prop is at least X number of yards. Trevor Lawrence's baseline right now at 53. So I guess we'll see, of course, as some of these books start to open some of these things up. But again, you know, we talk a lot about game flow. We talk about a lot of individual matchups here, and those are things that you'll want to take a chance to study over the weekend. And I can tell you that one of the best study guides you will have is Thor Nystrom's column, the National Championship Preview, over at Roto World. And first and foremost, man, it is absolutely outstanding to see your byline again. I know you've had a tough time here recently with some health issues, but great to see your byline. And as you mentioned, over at Roto World, you'll be doing a lot for the NFL draft here coming up as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're going to have a ton of content coming up. Obviously, you know, you guys can go and check out my championship preview right now. Had a lot of fun writing that. We have a lot of stuff up about the championship right now. Derek Clausen has an NFL draft prospect piece up right now that's really cool. We have a DFS thing right now for DFS players that Mark Lindquist wrote that's really nice. And then we're going to be transitioning into the NFL draft. We'll have a Senior Bowl thing for fans of the draft process. And we'll be getting the podcast rolling again here really quick. So come and check us out. And yeah, Adam, hey, man. Thanks so much for having me back. Really appreciate it. Really good time. I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely, brother. Make sure you follow Thor on Twitter at ThorKU. And again, check out his work over at RotoWorld. Thor, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again in the lead up to the draft.
Love you, brother. Appreciate it.